When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are entering, to possess and drive out before you many nations, the Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, seven nations larger and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you, and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them, and show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons, or take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly destroy you. This is what you are to do then, do to them. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, cut down their Asherah poles, and burn their idols in the fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. The Lord did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other peoples, for you were the fewest of all peoples. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your forefathers that he brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the land of slavery, from the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know, therefore, that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commands. But those who hate him, he will repay to their face by destruction. He will not be slow to repay to their face those who hate him. Therefore, take care to follow the commands, decrees, and laws I give you today. If you pay attention to these laws and are careful to follow them, then the Lord your God will keep his covenant of love with you as he swore to your forefathers. He will love you and bless you and increase your numbers. He will bless the fruit of your womb, the crops of your land, your grain, new wine, and oil, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flock in the land that he swore to your forefathers to give you. You will be blessed more than any other people. None of your men or women will be childless, nor any of your livestock without young. The Lord will keep you free from every disease. He will not inflict on you the horrible diseases you knew in Egypt, but he will inflict them on all who hate you. You must destroy all the peoples the Lord your God gives over to you. Do not look on them with pity, and do not serve their gods, for that will be a snare to you. You may say to yourselves, "These nations are stronger than we are. How can we drive them out?" But do not be afraid of them. Remember well what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. You saw with your own eyes the great trials, the miraculous signs and wonders, the mighty hand and outstretched arm with which the Lord your God brought you out. The Lord your God will do the same to all the peoples you now fear. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet among them until even the survivors who hide from you have perished. Do not be terrified by them, for the Lord your God, who is among you, is a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will drive out those nations before you, little by little. You will not be allowed to eliminate them all at once, or the wild animals will multiply around you. But the Lord your God will deliver them over to you, throwing them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will give their kings into your hand, and you will wipe out their names from under heaven. No one will be able to stand up against you. You will destroy them. The images of their gods you are to burn in the fire. Do not covet the silver and gold on them, and do not take it for yourselves, or you will be ensnared by it, for it is detestable to the Lord your God. Do not bring a detestable thing into your house, or you, like it, will be set apart for destruction. Utterly abhor and detest it, for it is set apart for destruction.
Helen, thank you. Well, I wonder if you saw the Daily Mirror's briefing to the nation on Tuesday morning. I have to say, it's not a paper that I normally take in our home. But it was the morning before the Holland-England match, and in true style, they described it as the most important day for England in the last 30 years. The headline ran like this: "Give them Edam, good thrashing." The Mirror then urged all true English citizens to pull up all your tulips, don't go anywhere near a windmill, draw a moustache on any Van Gogh you see, and call the Dutch embassy and ask for the number of the Dutch Mountaineering Club. Well, it worked. Deuteronomy 7 contains what you might call the briefing of Moses to the nation. The people of God are on the edge of God's promised land. It's one of the probably two or three most important days for them in the last 400 years since God called their father Abraham. But you see, as we look at Moses' briefing or orders group, it makes the Mirror's nationalistic rantings appear positively diplomatic. Just to look at the different words, you probably pick them up, that Moses uses to describe what the Israelites are to do to God's enemies. Verse 2. Destroy them totally. Destroy is what the original word says. Set them apart totally for destruction. Verse 2 again. Show them no mercy. Verse 3. Break down. Smash. Cut down. Burn. Verse 16, a different word for destroy, another word in the same language, meaning consume, eat, or devour. Verse 16, show no pity. Verse 22, drive out, or clear out. Verse 24, wipe out, blot out, exterminate. Verse 24 again, destroy, a different word again, meaning annihilate, the fourth or fifth Hebrew word used for destroy completely, and then set apart for destruction again at the end. See, if the United Nations War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague were to get hold of this briefing, pre-battle briefing, it would be enough to convict Moses of the sort of ethnic cleansing crimes that Radovan Karadzic is accused of. The trouble is, with chapter 7, it is not Moses who is in the dock. God is. If you look at verse 19b, the second half of verse 19, it says there, the Lord your God will do the same to the people. Verse 20, the Lord your God will send. Verse 21, don't be terrified, the Lord your God. Verse 22, the Lord your God will drive out. Now, some people try to get round this sort of problem, this kind of harsh language, by arguing that this is the God of the Old Testament, of course, and that by the time we get to the New Testament, this kind of language of destruction is not to be found. So I'm sure many of us will have heard the argument go something like this. Of course, the God of the Old Testament is the God of destruction and wrath, but the God of the New Testament is the God of love and peace. As if somehow God had gone through a major character change between the Old and New Testaments. The trouble is that that is simply not true. When we come to the New Testament, we come to passages spoken by Jesus which carried just the same idea. Listen to these words in the Sermon on the Mount, talking about people who do not follow him. Wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. Talking about people who don't teach the truth. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. And then the Apostle Peter talks about the day of destruction. The Apostle John in Revelation talks about the destruction of heaven and earth. Everywhere we look in the Bible, we find this language about the destruction of God's enemies. The message is consistent all the way through, and we cannot avoid it. Well, as Moses gives this briefing to God's people who are on the verge of entering into his promised land, he asks and answers two questions. The first question is this, verses 5 to 16, why? Why is God going to destroy his enemies in this way? And then verses 17 to 26, how? How are they going to be destroyed? First then, the question why, and we can see that that is the question that Moses is asking from the two explanatory fours. One in verse 6, he says, you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his treasured possession. I must have got the wrong verse there. Verse 5, sorry. Break down, yes, that's right, break down, smash, etc. Verse 6, for, because you are. And then the other explanatory four comes in verse 16. You must destroy all the people the Lord your God gives over to you. Don't look on them with pity. Don't serve their gods. For. So you can see there that what Moses is doing is answering the question, why? Why should we be doing this? And the extraordinary thing about these verses is that Moses doesn't explain the destruction of God's enemies primarily on the basis of what is wrong with the enemies. His major emphasis is God's eternal plan of rescue for his people. The summary statement of the verses is there in verse 6. Destroy them. Why? Well, for, because you are a holy people to the Lord your God. So the main reason that Moses gives for the destruction of God's enemies in this chapter is that God's people are set apart by him for his use, and he will not let them be led astray. He won't let his plan to rescue them be thwarted. And he begins in verses 6 through to 16 to tell us about the special relationship that God has with his people. He tells us about the nature of that relationship in verse 6. You are a people holy. That word means set apart for special use. The word that would have been used for a special vessel in the temple, consecrated for God. Then he says you are a treasured possession. The word used for a piece of royal jewelry, like a queen or a princess might wear. You are a treasured possession of the Lord our God. And then in verse 7, God has set his affection on you. So that's the nature of the relationship. Then verses 7 to 8 tells us the reason for the relationship. And verses 7 and 8 tell us that the reason for this relationship between God and his people is nothing that they have done. They haven't done anything particularly special. Look at verse 7. God did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than the other people. For you were the fewest of people. In other words, God hasn't chosen his people because he thinks that by choosing us, he'll be backing a winning horse. Quite the opposite. If God were looking for a winner, the last people he would have chosen would have been the people of Israel, who are a motley rabble. They were losers. The only reason God chose them was because they were recognized losers. It's immensely humbling to be chosen by God. And then he tells us that the reason for this relationship lies entirely with God's eternal purpose to rescue and to raise up a people who belong to him. Look at the language of verse 8. He does it because of his love. It was because the Lord loved you. And that word for love means fixed loyalty. He's done it out of his consistent, fixed, eternal plan and purpose. His promise to Abraham, to make Abraham into a great nation, to make his name great, to bless him, and to make him a blessing to all nations. That's the reason why he's chosen his people. And then in verses 13 to 15... Moses tells the people of the purpose of that relationship. It is that we enter into a new and perfect land. He will love you and bless you and increase your numbers. He will bless the fruit of your womb, the crops of your land, your grain, new wine and oil, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flocks in the land that he swore to your forefathers to give you. You will be blessed more than any other people. None of your men or women will be childless, nor any of your livestock without young. The Lord will keep you free from every disease. He won't inflict on you the horrible diseases you knew in Egypt. And so on. So do you see what Moses is doing for God's people as they stand on the edge of this promised land? On this most important day in their history? He's reminding them of where they stand in God's eternal purposes. They are God's people. God's choice. God has an eternal plan for them from before the beginning of time. He called Abraham. And then he brought them out of Egypt. They are his treasured possession. And he's going to take them somewhere. To a place where all the effects of our rebellion against God are dealt with. No more disease, no fruitlessness, no BSE, no failed crops or harvest, no death, no mourning, no crying. But you see, the trouble is that one thing lies in the way of this perfect place. In fact, seven things lie in the way of this perfect place, and they're listed in verse 1. I won't bother reading them again. What a friend of mine calls the ites. It's a lot easier than reading them just to call them the ites, the seven ites. And the problem with them is not so much their strength as their insidious idolatry. They've consistently and regularly worshipped other gods to God himself. They've refused to follow their creator. They've made their own idols. And Moses knows, and God knows, that their sensual, idolatrous religion will be so attractive to the Israelites that they will lead God's people away from God. Look at verse 4. They will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods, so the Lord's anger will burn against you. Look at verse 16. Destroy them. Don't look on them with pity. Don't serve their gods, for they will be a snare. You see, they will turn them away. They'll be like a noose, and they'll hook them and lead them away from Yahweh, the God of Israel. And because God knows that, and he has a purpose for his people, they must be destroyed. See, God knows that the promised place, the perfect land, couldn't be the perfect land if his enemies are at large in it. God's people couldn't be God's people if they're consistently being lured away and turned aside. Heaven couldn't be heaven if God's enemies were there. The new heaven and the new earth couldn't be the new heaven and the new earth if the serpent was still slithering around, urging God's people to abandon him at every opportunity. So says Moses, there's no room for God's enemies in God's perfect land. They must be destroyed. Now I can imagine that if there's anyone with any compassion or mercy or sense of justice here this evening at all, they'll be asking this question, isn't that totally unfair? I mean, isn't this the kind of random favoritism that you and I detest in the worst kind of classroom teacher? God randomly choosing one to favour like a classroom pet and putting the rest in detention and punishing them solely to protect the one? The answer to that is no. You see, it isn't as if God hasn't given his enemies some opportunity. In Genesis 15, verses 13 to 16, note it down if you're taking notes, we read that God kept his people out of the land for 400 years as he patiently and mercifully restrained his judgment on these nations. And during that time, he lavished on them health, prosperity, children, harvests, land, sunshine, jobs, careers, bank accounts. How did they respond? Outright rejection of God their creator. Oh, they engaged in ritual prostitution in their temples, in sorcery and divination and witchcraft, anything but follow the living God. Occult practices. They even sacrificed their own children. And in Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 4, it's summarized by Moses. The second half of the verse. Don't say that it's because of your goodness that you've come into the land. No, it's on account of the wickedness of these nations that they're being driven out. So that is the answer to the question, why? Why are God's enemies to be destroyed as he brings his people and rescues them into this new land? Because God has a plan for his people. We are his treasured possession. His affection has been set on us from before the beginning of eternity. We don't know why, but it has. And he will not allow his plan to rescue us and bring us into a perfect heaven to be thwarted by his enemies. They have turned their back on him and rejected him over and again. But we have a problem at this stage of our passage. I don't know if you've spotted it. Let me show it to you if you haven't, just to cause you a bit of trouble. See, you don't need the brains of an archbishop to realise that the evil, quite clearly, has not been driven out from among God's people on earth. It thrives. See, if you're a sceptic and you're sitting here this evening saying, well, it's all very well, you could say to me, look across at Israel. Hardly the perfect promised land. The Christian person sitting here this evening could say, well, I don't live in a perfect land, just look at my life. I'm still dogged by the weapons of God's enemy, the devil. I still find myself tempted. I am not free from the lure of idolatry. I do get ensnared by him again and again. Now, I don't know what your particular ongoing temptation is, but you have one. Just stop and think what it is for a moment. The one major thing that Satan uses to dog you, to fight you, to turn you away from God, to ensnare you, to beat you with. See, if you're anything like me, your Christian life is a constant war. Satan seems to be there all the time. Sometimes I fall. Frequently, I'm worn out. I just want to give up, put my feet up. See, however much the health and wealth teacher tries to persuade us that the land can be established on earth, anyone with their eyes vaguely open will realize that we do not live in the land that Moses promised. I only have to look around this room this evening. I know. There is person after person battling with sin, temptation, experiencing the effects of living in a fallen world, disease, sadness. Satan is still very much alive and kicking. The ites are still strong and mighty. The perfect land has not been realized as Moses said it should be. Well, if you've been with us over the last 6 weeks, you won't be surprised. Because, you see, Moses has told us over and again that it never would be realized. Look at verse 12 and the way it starts. That little word again. If. See, this perfect land is dependent on God's people following his laws and taking care to pay attention to them, but they don't. And remember in chapter 31, Moses in his purpose statement tells us that he knows they won't. And so this perfect land cannot be established on earth. So that then puts us in the same place as the Israelites, asking the same question as the Israelites were asking in verse 17. And that brings us to the second question. We've had why. Why are God's enemies to be destroyed? Because God has a purpose to bring us into his perfect land. Now we move on to how. We've seen that this perfect land has not been established on earth. That Satan is still very much alive and kicking. And that we cannot defeat him. Now we move on to the second question. How? How is this destruction going to take place? Is God really going to achieve his eternal plan of rescue? Will he ever rid us of his enemies and establish this perfect place? And in the meantime, how do we cope with his enemies? And the answer comes in the verses that follow. Now, just before we go into them, I have to say that we have to be very careful how we read them. Because we must read them realizing that God's people fail to achieve the driving out of the nations. So these verses are no longer telling us that we are to inflict this kind of devastation on anybody who stands up against us. You know, we are not to try and create a physical land on earth. Please understand me on this. It'd be enormously embarrassing if I got a telephone call from the Sunday People tomorrow saying that numbers of the congregation here had headed home this evening, reached for an axe, and gone out first thing tomorrow to lay in and give the good news to anybody who stood up against them. So we've just learned, haven't we, that God's perfect land cannot be created physically on earth. But in these verses that follow, verses 17 to 25, by telling us how God's perfect plan of rescue should have been brought into being by God's people, Moses gives us a blueprint as to how God is going to achieve his final victory over his enemies. And Moses tells the Israelites there to do three things. First, look back and remember. Don't be afraid. Verses 17 to 19. You may say to yourself, these nations are stronger than we are. How can we drive them out? But do not be afraid of them. Remember well that the Lord your God, what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. You saw with your own eyes the great trials, the miraculous signs and wonders, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm with which the Lord your God brought you out. The Lord your God will do the same to all the peoples you now fear. Verse 18 reads literally, remember, remember. And do you see what Moses is telling them to do? He's telling them to look back to the great day when God rescued them from slavery. He's telling them to look back to that great victory that sounded the death knell for all God's enemies from then on, when Pharaoh and the Egyptians were dealt with and he brought his people out to safety. That judgment and that destruction on that day showed the power of God over his enemies and the certain defeat of all his enemies from then on. So he says to his people, look back and remember. Don't be frightened. Then they're told to look around and trust. Don't be afraid. Verse 20 to 24. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet among them, until even the survivors who hide from you have perished. Do not be terrified by them, for the Lord your God who is among you is a great and awesome God. And 8 times the Israelites are told, the Lord your God will, the Lord your God will, the Lord your God will. The point is there in verse 21, don't be terrified. The Lord your God who is among you is a great and awesome God. Look around. He's there with you. And trust. And then look forward and fight. Verse 25 to 26. Burn the images. Don't covet the silver and gold. Don't take it for yourself. Don't bring it into your house. Set it apart. I don't know whether you saw the famous film Braveheart. It's a brilliant piece of sort of boys' own stuff. I gather that when it was shown in the Scottish cinemas, the Scots stood up and cheered every time an Englishman bit the dust. One thing I personally couldn't fathom was the Highland battle tactic of lifting your kilt at the enemy just before you charge into battle. It's not something that features in the modern-day company commander's manual of infantry tactics. But I wonder if you remember the Scots in their village before the arrival of the great hero William Wallace. See, again and again they were displayed as giving in, refusing to fight the English enemy. There was no point fighting. They'd failed to beat them back so many times. The English were too mighty, too strong. They had no hope to conquer. There was no point in joining the battle. They'd been defeated too many times. But then William Wallace, who I believe is rather more fiction than history, entered the frame. Once he'd won his first great victory over the enemy, well, it was as if a flame was lit all across the Highlands. How are the enemy going to be defeated? How will we drive them out? How can we stand against the English? Look back and remember. He's done it. They're as good as defeated. He is a mighty rescuer. Look around and trust. He's on the battlefield with you. He's there amongst you. He's by your side. Look forward and fight. It is worth pressing on. He will do it. He will drive them out. And this land will be set apart. See, the question of these verses is this: how will God ever bring this eternal plan of rescue about? How will he destroy his enemies? We can't do it. How do we deal with God's enemies as we live now? The answer is there in that second half of the chapter. Look back and remember. Look around and trust. Look forward and fight. Now, I don't know your specific situation. I haven't got X-ray vision. I do know that if you're really progressing in the Christian life, you will be battling with one area of temptation or another. It may be pride. The temptation to think that we've got it all sussed here at St. Helens. Temptation to think, well, I'm rather better than that other person in leadership or in service. Maybe greed. The longing for power or money. That company car, that partnership place, that secretary, so that when I jump, he or she, when I speak, he or she jumps. Maybe that the temptation that besets you is sexual purity. Temptation to think or long or explore in areas we know we shouldn't. Maybe envy. Jealousy that I don't have a girlfriend like him or I'm not married like her. Now, I have no idea what area you may be battling in. But I know it's right to be doing battle. Moses tells us why. We are holy, set apart for God's use. We are his treasured possession. He has set his affection on us. His purpose is to bring us to his eternal perfect land. We are not to allow these things to fester among us, to lead us astray, to ensnare us. We must put them to death among us. How, you say? How can I? I mean, I've tried over and again. They seem so strong. I'm so weak. I failed over and again. Will this battle be endless? Is there no rescue? Won't we ever be given victory? Moses tells us how. Look back and remember. God isn't asking us to do it on our own. We have a mighty rescuer. He has paid the price for sin. He has dealt the death blow to Satan once and for all on the cross. The enemy is not invincible. He has been defeated. Heaven is real. It is around the corner. Look around and trust. He is with us by his Spirit. We are not alone on the battlefield. So look forward and fight. And if this sin is amongst us, and if you're hanging on to it, put it to death. Do battle with it. Christ is with you and has conquered. Let's pray together. You are a people holy to the Lord your God. He has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people. his treasured possession. Our Father God, we praise you for this, your purpose. You have prepared a place for us through Jesus Christ. That it is a place free from all the effects of sin. Free from temptation. Free from disease. Free from sadness. We pray that you would grant us strength to look back to the Lord Jesus on the cross, to know his presence with us by his Spirit, and so to endure to be with you forever in heaven. Amen.